Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5. Karma Yoga, Action, Krishna Consciousness, text number 13. No. Sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste sukhambasi navadware pare dehi naiva kurvana karyan. When the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. Please repeat. When the embodied living being, controls his nature, and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, the material body, neither working, nor causing work to be done. Purport, the embodied soul lives in the city of nine gates. The activities of the body, or the figurative city of the body, are conducted automatically by its particular modes of nature. The soul, though subjecting himself to the conditions of the body, can be beyond those conditions if he so desires. Owing only to forgetfulness of his superior nature, he identifies with the material body and therefore suffers. By Krishna consciousness, he can revive his real position and thus come out of his embodiment. Therefore, when one takes the Krishna consciousness, one at once becomes completely aloof from bodily activities. In such a controlled life in which his deliberations are changed, he lives happily within the city of nine gates. The nine gates are mentioned as follows. Nava dware pare dehi hangso le layate bahi vashi sarvasya lokasya stavarasya charasya cha. Supreme Personality of Godhead is living within the body of a living entity. It is the controller of all living entities all over the universe. The body consists of nine gates, two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, the anus, and the genitals. The living entity in his conditioned stage identifies himself with the body. When he identifies himself with the Lord within himself, he becomes just as free as the Lord even while in the body. Shweta Sutara Upanishad 3:18. Therefore, a Krishna-conscious person is free of both the outer and inner activities in the material body. So the verse again, Sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste sukhambasi naiva dware pare dehi naiva korva nakaryan. When the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Pasyadhyade Sakarane. Thank you all for coming. Here in this verse, it's quite a mystery what Krishna is talking about, because unless we're a liberated soul, Krishna consciousness, for most part, it seems quite mysterious. Something about sarva karmani manasa. We're renouncing the results of our work within our mind. Sarva karmani sanyasyaste sukhambasi, and then becoming happy. Naiva dware, in the city of nine gates, not pare dehi, naiva korvan, vikarya, neither working nor causing work to be done. Sometimes the devotees were executing service in devotional service for sometimes many years, and we still can't quite figure out what Krishna consciousness is all about. And sometimes we're studying the books and we know the philosophy, we can quote so many verses, and we still can't really figure out what Krishna consciousness is all about. Of course, to become Krishna conscious, everyone would like to meet Krishna. If Krishna consciousness means to be conscious of Krishna, and we just say Hare Krishna and Krishna is there, then it would seem very easy. But of course, we say Hare Krishna and Krishna may be there, but the question is where we are. If Krishna is actually there, then we must be somewhere else. And even we bring our consciousness here, even when we seem to be conscious, but we're still not quite conscious. We're almost like I remember when I was, I guess, 8 years old, and my parents decided I was going to get my tonsils out. And the nice thing, of course, was all my friends had their tonsils out. So I also wanted my tonsils out because that's when you... Because then you get ice cream at the end. When you're 8 years old, you don't really understand what the trade-offs are. Just like there was one boy in China, when they came out with the iPod 3, he wanted an iPod so much, and an iPhone, that he traded in his kidney for an iPhone, an iPod. And then he was complaining to his mother, so that he wasn't feeling very well. But he had in his iPod an iPhone. So. In any case, I remember they put this anesthesia, and it was almost like for a moment you were there, but you weren't really there. You were like entering to the rabbit hole, so to speak. So we're deep in the rabbit hole, you might say, of unconsciousness. Although we're very much convinced that we actually know what's going on, but actually this is just a dream for us. And Krishna is so expert at creating dreams. We have a dream in multi modes of nature. And to understand how to get out of the dream requires some intelligence. It's an operation, how to get out of the dream-like state of existence that we're in. Because there's the process of karma yoga, or jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and bhakti yoga. And in one sense, karma yoga or jnana yoga or astanga yoga is more perceivable to us who are actually in the dreamlike state of existence. Bhakti is not so easy in one sense, in the sense that it's hard to grasp exactly what's being talked about without some background in karma yoga, jnana yoga, and even astanga yoga. What does it mean to love someone that you're not even conscious of? Or you're only partially conscious of? Because if we were conscious of Krishna, we'd love him because he's so attractive. But we're unconscious, so how do we love him? We can only love him by trying to become conscious of him through the process that's given to us. So part of that process is that we have to understand what we're actually doing. It appears we're doing so many things. I can move my arm, I can move my leg, I seem to be speaking, and it seems that I'm doing so many different things. Of course, according to Bhagavad Gita, we're not doing anything. So that's quite a shock for someone who's thinking that they're doing so many things. And then the Bhagavad Gita says we're not doing anything. So either we're crazy or the Bhagavad Gita is crazy. Of course, it doesn't say we're not doing anything. It says the only thing we're doing is desiring. We're not doing anything in the sense that we have no direct contact with the material nature. Of course, we're contacting the material nature through our consciousness. That is, we're aware of the body to some very limited extent. We're aware, for instance, I'm moving my arm, and therefore I can feel my arm moving. But actually, I'm not really moving the arm, although in the process of desiring that the arm be moved, I get the results of the arm being moved by my feeling what the result is. But according to Bhagavad Gita, actually all I'm doing is desiring, and Krishna in my heart, he senses my desire just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. So he senses that I want to move my hand, and therefore he controlling the material nature, he has the material nature move the hand, and because I'm conscious of my hand, therefore I perceive the results of that activity. But if I want to move the hand, but Krishna doesn't order the material nature to do it, and the material nature doesn't do it, then my hand won't move. Therefore, there is actually a connection between ourselves eternally and Krishna. And now there's a connection between ourselves and Krishna and the material nature, because instead of desiring in terms of Krishna, we're desiring in terms of the material nature. We find ourselves in some kind of body, and according to the body we're in, according to our circumstances, our desires are more or less focused on what our circumstances are, either to create a more favorable material circumstance or to avoid an unfavorable circumstance. And according to our desires and according to what we do, we're provided with a certain amount of intelligence. Because according to the mentality we have, then that creates a certain, according to our mentality, we perceive things in different ways. The lower our mentality, the more unclear things are. The higher our mentality, the more clear things are. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. Shabde says, Paravastavada bodha jato yavan nijignasita atma tattvam yavan kriyastavadi dhammanovai karmatmaka yena sharira bandaha. That one is said to be defeated by the material nature as long as he doesn't inquire about the Absolute Truth. That as long as one is not inquiring about the Absolute Truth, jignasita atma tattvam, then one's consciousness remains, then the mind is cloudy. In other words, if we're not raising our consciousness, then either we're staying in the same consciousness, cloudy kind of consciousness, covered by our past, the results of our past activities. When we get a material body, Krishna not only gives us a material body, he also gives us a material consciousness, according to what we've done in the past. And material consciousness is like a covering. If you see through a colored lens, like a yellow lens, then the whole world appears to be yellow. And if it's the pink lens, then it appears to be pink. So according to the consciousness we developed, it's like a filter, and therefore we see the world through that filter. So according to that filter, if we act a certain way, then the filter gets either bigger or smaller or thinner or it gets thicker. But if we're not inquiring about the Absolute Truth, we're not trying to make any progress towards purifying our consciousness, then the result is that our consciousness, our mind remains cloudy, and therefore our consciousness, the soul's ability to perceive through that cloudy mind, remains unclear. And as long as the mind is unclear, as long as the consciousness is unclear, then one has to take another body. Therefore, yoga is to act in such a way as to clarify the consciousness. But then, evam prasant karma, evam manak karma visham prayungte avidyatma upadiyamane. But as long as we're identifying ourselves with this body, then naturally we're going to desire in terms of the body. But since the only thing that the soul is really doing is desiring, therefore as long as we're identifying with the body in some way, all we're going to do is desire in some way for the body. There may be some desires that are glorified as being very noble, other desires glorified as being less noble or ignoble. But in any case, the whole idea is the body. Evam karma visham prayungte avidyatman upadiyamane pritirna vanmaye vasudeva. As long as one is not really trying to develop love for Vasudeva, then nimochya yak nimochyate deha yogena tadva, then he has to take one body after another. So Krishna consciousness is, first of all, to convince us that there is a God, that there is actually a Krishna. And it's not just some, you know, Indians and, or some Indian in the Himalayas, Vyasadeva, sitting there bored to death and therefore looking around at the different plants in the Himalayas and smoking some of them and then getting inspiration to write some book in order to support his habit in the Himalayas. He tried to sell some of them, and people they liked, kind of like the trilogy, the Hobbits or something. They really sold enough books, and it became a popular legend. The Krishna legend. And naturally the hippies, when Prabhupada came, the hippies in America were naturally attracted to this Krishna legend and took it up. Because they thought, Vyasadeva, he's one of them. No, there's actually a God. First of all, Krishna doesn't even start with God. He starts with the amazing fact that although we're not the body and have nothing really to do with the body, we're 100% convinced, or maybe 99, if we've been practicing Hare Krishna, the sadhana for 50 years, we're 99 convinced that we are the body. That actually, if I'm not the body, if there is some doubt about that, I'm sure that I'm the mind at least. And even we give up the mind, still I'm not going to give up my false ego, even. Therefore, this connection with the body, the soul's connection, of course we believe in ourselves. We, at least everyone has to believe that they exist. If not, then there's no sense listening to me. Because if you don't believe that you exist, you probably won't believe I exist either. So all of us have to recognize at least that we exist within the body, and that somehow or another we're conscious, not only this gross body, but our whole conception of life is leading us in some direction. And our consciousness of life, our conception of life, is very variable because sometimes it's linked up with our mind. According to where our mind is heading us, where it wants to find happiness, therefore, our conception of life can change on what they say a dime. If we see something we think is going to make us happy or give us some happiness, then my conception of life can completely change in a moment. Because that's the way the material nature works. As soon as we look at something in the material world and think we might be able to enjoy it, there's a whole material nature provides us with that conviction by ultimately just taking away our Krishna consciousness, at least temporarily, and convincing us that if we do gratify our senses, everything will be all right. We'll get the happiness we want, and there won't be any reaction, because we're nice, we're something special. Of course, it never works out like that, but when we have no intelligence, then it appears that it might be like that. In any case, since our intelligence can change all the time, and along with our intelligence, our conception of life changes, and along with our conception of life, where we can put our loving, we can say our loving propensity, where we're going to take shelter, where we're going to desire, we could say, that may change very rapidly. So Krishna consciousness is to become convinced, first of all, that I'm actually a spiritual soul, and that my interest lies in spirit, not simply in a material arrangement. And then that there is actually something to focus our attention on, namely the Supreme, who is supposed to be a reservoir of pleasure. But according to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is not only above the senses, he's also above the mind, he's also above the intelligence, he's existing in spirit on the spiritual platform. And therefore, in order to actually contact him, then we have to go beyond the senses, we have to go beyond the mind, we have to go beyond the intelligence. And since we're caught up in a whole world of fantasy that doesn't seem to us very much like fantasy, it seems to us to be very real. And Krishna is so expert, he's created this virtual reality so expertly that for all intents and purposes, it's kind of a kind of reality. It's an experience. It's certainly an experience, whether it's the experience we're actually looking for or not. It's certainly an experience, and we're caught up in it. But if we follow the process of Krishna consciousness, then gradually we get the techniques so that we can, at least for some time, go beyond the sensual platform somewhat. We may even link up beyond the mental platform. We might even go for a little while beyond the intellectual and then beyond the false ego platform and actually feel a little devotion for Krishna. And then, of course, Krishna reciprocates because Krishna is reciprocating with us all the time, supplying us this gross body, supplying us our mentality, supplying us through the material nature with so many conceptions of life and so many different false identifications with a false ego according to how strong our intelligence is. He's supplying us through the material nature with so many things just exactly according to how we're desiring. And he also reciprocates when by good fortune and by some sincerity, some maybe good association, we're chanting Hare Krishna and we can actually feel that I should listen a little bit. We actually feel like not only I should listen in order to escape our material miseries, or we listen because we want to get some, you know, we want to get some material benefit from it. We actually feel relaxed, we're in a good mood, and we listen, and we actually feel Krishna's presence. And we realize, actually, it does work. Because it always works, the question is whether we're doing the right things. In order to, it always works if we know what to do, but we don't really know what to do to actually make it work. We just find out a little bit at a time. It's like a great adventure, and we're getting little pieces of the puzzle, one after another. In any case, the ultimate puzzle, piece to the puzzle, is to actually feel surrendered to Krishna. Because we're just like a person on a boat, the boat, one foot on the land, and one foot on the boat, and the boat's pulling out. And we don't know whether to jump on the land, because it seems like it maybe is more secure, or to jump on the boat. So we don't know whether really to take shelter of Krishna, and then we worry about if I do that, what's going to happen to all my material plans, or to take shelter of my material plans, and then worry at the end, you know, maybe at the end I'll think about Krishna. After I satisfy all my material desires, all my material plans, then at the end I'll take shelter of Krishna. And I won't have to worry about all these material plans because I already satisfied all of them. Therefore, I won't worry about them. Because we know that's a trick by the material nature, because there's no end to how many plans. The better you get at something, then the more people will bother you because they want to take advantage of how expert you are at something, and therefore you become more and more expert. There's no end to it, except that you end your body and then you come back in order to get the results of your becoming good at something or very bad at something or in between. But whatever we're doing in the material world, there's no end to, there's always going to be something to do. Just like we go to sleep at night, you can be assured when we wake up in the morning, there'll be another opportunity to eat. It's not that yesterday we ate, and we may have eaten a lot, and that tomorrow, that you don't have to eat anymore, because you already ate yesterday. It's already finished. And last night you slept, so you don't have to sleep tonight, because you already did that. And there won't be any more desire for defending or for mating. All these things, you already did that yesterday. Now you can do something else. No, if you ate yesterday, you can be assured not only today we're going to eat, but even we stop eating for a month, even we stop eating for, 2 months, we leave this body, is it sure in our next lifetime we're going to eat a lot? Someone's going to say fasting and we're going to eat more. So it's not like I conquered. No, that's a different thing. Been there and done that. Yeah.
Bought a t-shirt.
What's that?
Been there and done that, bought a t-shirt.
Oh. So material nature is not like that. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That's all really, that's the basis of everything here. It may have its subtleties. You know, maybe you think if I sleep on a certain type of bed, then my sleeping will be really ecstatic. Similarly, eating, you know, if I just get the right combination of spices and, you know, as soon as I taste this food, my seeker will stand on it. Or maybe, you know, I try to become Romeo, but it didn't work, but at least I should try to become Tarzan. Or maybe Mickey Mouse or something. No, there's no end to material life, and there may be so many subtleties of the eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, but that's all that's going to go on. But that's what goes on in the spiritual world, but the difference is that Krishna is the center of that, and here our body is the center. But here, due to our false ego, we are imagining that it's not the body that's the center, we're imagining that we're the center. Although it's only our body, the body that we're in, it's really not ourselves, we have nothing to do with this big drama that's going on. But due to our false ego, we're imagining that it's actually me who's doing the whole thing. And therefore when people are clapping, they're actually clapping for me. Although they're actually clapping for Krishna. Because Krishna, through his material nature, has arranged everything, and I just desire, and we take all the credit for desiring. But it's actually Krishna, just like I may authorize, I may tell someone I want such and such painting made. And then they paint the painting, and then I take all the credit for the painting. But actually, I just made a suggestion about the painting, and we have to give some credit to the person who actually painted it. So we're desiring, maybe we get some credit or discredit. We certainly did get discredit in the material world for it. But it's actually the painter is the material nature is making the whole painting. The whole artwork is made by the material nature under Krishna's direction. And we're simply the person who, you could say, we're not hiring Krishna, but we're simply desiring Krishna to create this through his material nature, the situation that we find ourselves in. But at least we have to give Krishna some of the credit. And as long as we keep on wanting to create something, whether we're Brahma or a demigod or living in Dallas or an ant somewhere, as long as we want these creations, then we just suffer or in so-called enjoy. Therefore, one has to cultivate knowledge about Krishna. And a vision about what's going on, because if we have that vision, we won't be so much caught up in whatever drama that we personally are in, thinking, wow, I've got this part to play, it's the best part I've had since time immemorial, I'm not going to give it up. Because every cat and dog on the street is thinking the same thing. Indra was cursed to become a pig. And when he became a pig, he got this beautiful wife. Whenever he saw her tail, he became just enthused like anything. And his children, they ate more stool on the block than any other children. Any other pig on the block. So he was proud of them. And therefore he was enjoying life like anything with his beautiful wife with his curly tail. And these, you know, really enthusiastic little kids eating stool all day long. And so in the heavenly planets there was some disturbance. Lord Brahma came and said to Indra, please come back to the heavenly planets and try to, you know, take over, start managing again. But Indra said, no way, look at this girl. Look at her tail. Doesn't it excite you? And look at my kids. I mean, look at them eat. I'm proud of them. So Brahma realized Indra was really deep into it, up to his neck. So he took his sword and cut off his wife's head, Indra's wife's head, and his little kid's head. And then Indra realized he was next, and he decided to renounce his situation and go back to the heavenly planets. So material nature is such, wherever we are, we actually think we're the hero of some wonderful drama going on, and that we're actually doing some wonderful thing here that we wouldn't give up for any other circumstance, any other situation. So we have to convince that in the material world, whether we're Brahma or we're here living in Dallas or an insect, it's more or less the same thing. And our real thing is we have to cultivate this mood of doing something to please Krishna. That we have to develop this understanding that we're just a tiny little soul, and that there's someone called Krishna who's the most wonderful person, and we should somehow or another connect with him. By the only means we have now is desiring to become, as Krishna says, nimitra matram bhavasavasachin. Utilize whatever circumstance we have and try to apply that to please Krishna. In Krishna's service, which means to do what Krishna wants us to do through his representatives, to not think, well, because his representatives told me to do something, that's the thing I shouldn't do, I'm not going to do, because that would mean that I was a servant. And I didn't come to the material world to be a servant. So whatever they tell me to do, then I'll do the exact opposite to prove that I'm actually independent of God. So of course, as devotees, we may not be conscious of what exactly that mood is, but since we've cultivated since time immemorial, therefore, you know, Krishna, Bhagavad Gita says something, and we say, oh, I can't understand what this is, too philosophical. Therefore, a lot of times, the devotees, they like to hear stories about Krishna, because it's entertaining, and there are wonderful stories. The other thing is that Krishna is not telling us to do anything. And then there's philosophy, and it seems like, you know, philosophy to the conditioned soul is just like someone criticizing us. Instead of saying, you're a rascal, you're a fool, what you're doing is useless, it says, it's the same thing in a philosophical way. So we sit there listening to it, and it's almost like the speaker is insulting us for half an hour. But actually, it's through philosophy we can get a vision, and with that vision we can develop a certain mood. And part of that mood is we actually can feel that Krishna is really our friend, and that it's not, you know, we are insignificant, and we, you know, it's not so bad being insignificant. It's not so embarrassing. We shouldn't be embarrassed that we're only 1/10,000th the size of the tip of hair in size. My mother always thought I should be a lot bigger than that. I was always had this complex. I was very small when I was younger. And now I found out I'm even smaller than I thought it was. I haven't even grown. It's been so many years. I've been in this, you know, here for 60 years and I haven't grown any. No, to actually understand that, yes, we're insignificant, but, you know, we were born like that, so what to do? We have to accept. That's our nature. And that Krishna, he's so big, we shouldn't criticize him. You know, why is he so big and I'm so small? It's unfair, you know. We should take this at least to mediation. No, we're here in the material world because we just don't want to accept reality, and therefore Krishna is very kind. He's created this unreal situation for us. So we can just understand how Krishna is unlimitedly big, but he's also unlimitedly nice. So he deserves to be big. And we're also small, but we're also nice too. Good things sometimes come in small packages. Small is beautiful. So we're also nice also. But we should connect with the Supreme Nice. If we really want to help ourselves and we want to help everyone else, we should actually connect with the Supreme Nice, principally through knowledge, through developing the proper conception. Then we can have the proper mood and we can accept Krishna. We can accept our real selves rather than this false self we've generated from our, that Krishna has generated because we're generating certain desires. So Krishna is generated through his material nature, this false self that we're identifying with. But we can accept our real selves, even though we're quite insignificant. And we accept Krishna, although he's unlimitedly significant. If we can simply accept those two things, then our whole life will be very productive and happy. And if we can't, it doesn't matter what we do with this body, through our generation of a false ego, what kind of body we find ourselves in, it won't make any difference unless we can actually come to accept our real identity and we can accept Krishna's existence also and our relationship with Krishna as it should be rather than as we're imagining it is. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Because if we generate that proper mood, that proper conception, what's actually going on here, and we develop the proper mood that goes on with it, then the chanting Hare Krishna is very effective. And if we chant Hare Krishna without the proper conception, then the result is we won't have the proper mood. And if we don't have the proper mood, we won't get anything from the chanting. And we don't get anything from the chanting, whatever is going through our mind, because we're already equipped with the mind and we're equipped with the false ego, we're already absorbed in the material nature, then we become interested in the drama that's going on rather than the chanting. Then we complain, oh, I'm trying to chant, but my mind is going here and there. Yeah, our mind's going here and there, and we're following it wherever it's going. Then we blame it on our mind. But actually, it's because we're not in the mood for really chanting to Krishna to engage in his service, because if we don't really... We did that, we have to accept that I'm going to find out I'm completely insignificant. And also my material drama where I'm trying to become significant will go away. And then we'll find out Krishna is unlimitedly significant and my whole attempt to become significant will seem ridiculous. And then I'll think, well, you know, my God, I'm actually eternally insignificant. There's nothing I can do to become even more insignificant than I'm already am, because I'm absolutely insignificant, and Krishna is absolutely, absolutely significant. And the only thing I can do is try to become significant to Krishna. Otherwise, my life is completely wasted. I've already wasted a few hundred billion lifetimes of Brahma in my attempt to become significant, to imagine that I have some significance, which is only through this body that we're imagining it. So many bodies, so many times attempts at it, but it's all just like a dream. But the conditioned soul is so stubborn, he won't give up this attempt under any circumstance. Even someone's torturing him, he's thinking, how wonderful I am, I'm being tortured, and I'll get into the newspapers, and I'll become famous for being tortured, and it'll all be worth it, because everyone's going to think about me and feel sorry for me. I'm going to be the center of everyone's attention, and they'll give their sympathy and their love to me. Even Jarasandha was willing to sacrifice his own head to Krishna and Arjuna and Bhima if he thought he was going to get immortal fame on the basis of it. So everyone's just working hard ultimately to get a nice tombstone so that someone can write something nice on it. And then they can come back as a ghost and sit over the tombstone and hope someone's going to come by and appreciate what was written on the tombstone. Or come by and offer some plastic flowers to it and cry or something. Or real flowers. During the lifetime, no one even thought, no one offered them a flower. But after they die, after they leave their body, then people come by with flowers. So then finally people have appreciated. When you lose a good thing, you realize what you lost. No, we have to develop the proper conception, then we can have the proper mood. And we have the proper mood, then we can chant Hare Krishna, and Krishna will reveal himself to us, the mood of devotion, and then the chanting will have some meaning to us, and then all these thoughts and everything else won't seem very significant. And if we don't have the proper conception, we won't have the proper mood. If we don't have the proper mood, then the chanting won't have any meaning to us, and everything else will seem very much more significant to us. So, again, thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Maharaji, my question is, how we can find our mistakes and correct it before it becomes too late? Especially in a spiritual life.
Mistakes.
Yeah,
our whole life is a mistake.
I think we have to work on our one mistake. We have to work on
offense with chanting, when we are chanting, not chanting.
Well, the most important thing is, if we really want to find out what our mistakes are, we have to read the books by Prabhupada, especially Bhagavad Gita. Then one after another will tell us what our mistakes are. The question is, we really have the capacity to understand usually one mistake at a time. So we can catch up on one mistake and then try to correct it. Even to a small extent. I mean, after all, we're just doing the same thing over and over again. It's not like you have to become a great psychiatrist or a great scholar to figure out what we're doing wrong. It's very simple what we're doing wrong. We're looking around to see if there is someone who can find me to be a great hero in the world. It's going to appreciate all my great qualities and all my, whatever it is, my mood or whatever else in the material world. Find me and then surrender to me. Become my servant. Think of me, become my servant, offer their obeisances unto me, etc. We're contemplating the objects of the senses, and then if we find one, then we become lusty to enjoy it. And then if we actually get some enjoyment, we become greedy for more and more enjoyment, that this love affair will go on forever. And then when it doesn't, we become angry, become frustrated. Why aren't you surrendering to me? I'm so great, I'm so nice to you, I'm so this and that. I'm your Krishna, or I'm your goddess of fortune. Why don't you reciprocate? And we become frustrated, and then a whole conception, a whole drama comes in. We create this whole dreamlike drama, and then we forget actually what is really going on. Then we lose our intelligence, and then we wind up getting more and more deeply involved. She wasn't the goddess of fortune I was looking for. Let me find the real goddess of fortune who will take me as their Narayan. Let me find a real four-handed Narayan. So it's the same thing over and over again. It's nothing new. But whether we understand and we catch it, how long it takes us to catch our mistake, that's all. It's the same mistake over and over again. How long it takes us to catch our mistake is really up to our determination and our understanding, our conviction that I shouldn't do the same thing again. How long it takes our intelligence to kick in before we realize that, you know, I should take my mind away from the objects of the senses and put it back onto Krishna again. So it's not necessarily that we're going to learn something completely different. It's just a question of conviction, determination, you know, what's the right, what I should actually do, what I know I should do. Yes.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. You mentioned actually feel surrender to Krishna. Now, from my understanding is that we're part of the marginal potency of the Lord, the superior energy, though, as well, and that we're right now under the power of Mahamaya, and when we're in the spiritual world, we'll be under the influence of Yogamaya. So is our surrender, can the soul actually feel surrender? Like, can we surrender, or is it just a trick that we like kind of play through the motions, we fake it till we make it, and then Krishna says, okay.
We surrender. We're working through a desire. So at least we can see how our desire is manifested. Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna has his representatives who also speak Bhagavad Gita. If we follow what Krishna told us to do, then that's surrender to some extent. Therefore, there is anukulyasya sankalpe pratikulyasya varjana. So at first we have to do what Krishna asked us to do, and then we have to do what we shouldn't do what he tells us not to do. Then we'll have to develop the mood, the conception of life, you could say, along with the mood, that Krishna will protect us, that Krishna will maintain us. Then, as we become convinced like that, become more and more conscious of Krishna, then we'll have no interest except for Krishna's interest, and then we'll always feel meek and humble because we'll actually realize Krishna. So it's a step-by-step process of surrender. But it's very real. When Krishna says, you know, to everything here belongs to him, and that we should utilize everything for his service, and Krishna's representative tells us to give some Lakshmi to spread Krishna consciousness, and we give the Lakshmi, that's very much surrender. Or Rupa Goswami tells us to get up early in the morning, come to Mangalarti, and we do it. We bring our, we desire our body to be there, then that's surrender. And if we think I don't have to move my body to the temple, I don't have to do what Rupa Goswami tells me in the nectar of devotion, and I can still be surrendered, well, that's really, we can't even bring our body, we can't even desire that our body does what Rupa Goswami tells us to do. How are we going to do what our he tells us our mind to do, our intelligence or our ego? So first we surrender by bringing our body, following what, clapping our hands in front of the deities, or just being in front of the deities, or chanting Hare Krishna on japa beads. He gives us 64 items in the nectar of devotion. So we follow those. And then, he also, there's a certain mentality that we have to develop. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells us in the Shikshastika something about that mentality. So we have to develop, we have to see that our mentality is that. And then our conception of life also. Because our mentality and our activities will follow our conception. And then that mood of surrendering, Krishna will give us the intelligence. If we follow the other processes, and Krishna will give us the intelligence, but that mood of surrender is. Because there's all, that is the mood of surrender, to follow Krishna's instructions through his representatives. So as we do that, then that mood of surrender will develop. It won't develop by itself. It will develop through following the instructions that Krishna has already given us. So if we follow those instructions, then we'll understand what the mood of surrender is. If we don't, it'll be a great mystery. Anything else?
Yes. For the benefit of repetition and some other parties here, what are some of the items that are that help to get in that favorable mood or to do those things that you're speaking about?
The five most powerful activities are chanting the holy names of Krishna, worshiping the deities of Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, serving the devotees, and living in a place where spiritual life is being cultivated, or preaching Krishna consciousness and creating a spiritual atmosphere. So those are the five most powerful processes, and we perform them under the guidance of Krishna and his representatives with the mood of service. Yes.
Is surrender on the same level as bhakti, or does bhakti, do you have to surrender in order to be able to go like form bhakti yoga, or does it kind of go simultaneously?
Bhakti yoga means surrender. If you're just in the material world, I mean, surrender, usually we have the conception of surrender that there's one army and say Alexander the Great, he's attacking a city, the city is surrounded, and Alexander the Great is saying surrender, and they won't surrender, and they're starving to death, and they finally, before they starve to death, they surrender. So that's usually our conception of surrender. When we're starving to death and we have no other choice, and we surrender to Krishna, I give up. Feed me. No, surrender means that Krishna is asking us to do something, and we're actually trying to do it. That's devotional service. It's the process of surrender. But we're not surrendering to some army that's approaching us to conquer us. We're surrendering to the most attractive, beautiful person who's trying to give us an ocean of bliss and happiness and love. So we're surrendering to love. And we do that by loving Krishna. And the way we do that is by service in the beginning, by following Krishna's instructions. Then as we follow his instructions, then gradually Krishna reveals himself to us, and then our natural love for Krishna is revealed to us, is developed and revealed to us, and then that's surrender. So it's not like we're surrendering and then we surrender to Krishna and he grabs us and beats us. Finally, you know, he breaks down the walls of our ignorance and he grabs us and shakes us. You stupid soul, why were you here for so long? No, that's our material conception of surrender. Actually, we're trying to surrender to Krishna's love by loving Krishna. Otherwise, we don't surrender to Krishna, and then we surrender, or in the mood of surrendering to our material desires. And that's where we get beaten by the material nature. We desire to fulfill our material desires, and we just wind up in difficulty. Anything else? Thank you very much. Karantaraj Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Poor Premanande.
Jai.
Jai.